From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Welcome to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this beautiful Thursday. On today's show, I'll chat with MSU defensive end Shalique Calhoun. We'll talk Tigers falling to the A's, throwback Thursday, NHL and NBA action, and Tiger Woods out of the U.S. Open. But first, here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners.
I'm Alex Sharp with your Current Sports headliners for this Thursday, May 29th. Starting local with Lansing Eastern, after 7 seasons with the Quakers, boys basketball coach Rod Watts has decided to leave the team and take a job closer to home. He will be coaching Westland John Glenn, which is close to his hometown of Farmington Hills. He served as an assistant to Everett's Johnny Jones, which won a Class 8 state title in 2004 with former Michigan State star Goran Suton and former Oakland star Derek Nelson. To baseball, the Detroit Tigers lost one to the Oakland A's the other night. Brad Ausmus pulled Anibal Sanchez last night in the 9th inning to bring in Joe Nathan and to bring the finishing touches to a 1-0 lead over the Oakland A's, but ending result was not good as Nathan gave up a 3-run walk-off homer as the A's went on to beat the Tigers 3-1. The A's and Tigers play their final game of a 4-game series today at 3:35 p.m. as an afternoon game. Calvin Johnson is a little heated with his girlfriend, according to a report from the one and only TMZ. Calvin Johnson was caught on tape between a rock and a hard place after police were called following an altercation between his girlfriend, Lions marketing employee Brittany McNorton, and the alleged mother of Johnson's 6-month-old child, Shaylin Blanton. The incident, which occurred last weekend in Johnson's home state of Georgia, it stems from a reported violation of Johnson and Blanton's custody agreement. Now, the two women got into a heated argument where McNorton reportedly threatened to strike Blanton. The Lions organization is aware and are taking all things into their own hands. The Heat fall to the Pacers. Paul George led the Pacers with 37 last night as they stay alive to win 93-90 in Game 5. LeBron was in foul trouble all night, only had 7 points on 2 of 10 shooting. Game 6 is Friday night in Miami. To hockey, the Blackhawks also forced the Game 6, beating LA 5-4 in double overtime. Michael Hanzus scored the game winner 2 minutes into the second overtime. 1-4, Patrick Kane assists. The Hawks will try and push the series to 7 games on Friday at the Staples Center. So Aaron Hernandez, reportedly spilled drink, may have spurned a 2012 double murder committed by the former Patriots tight end Aaron Hernandez. Attorneys claim Hernandez had a drink spilled on him at a nightclub by Daniel Abreu, along with Safiro Furtado, who were shot later that evening. Hernandez pled not guilty to 7 criminal charges and was ordered held without bail. Tiger Woods is now out of the U.S. Open as he continues to rehab from surgery. He underwent microdiscectomy surgery for a pinched nerve in March 31st. It's still unclear whether he will return. Rory McIlroy calls off his engagement with tennis star Caroline Wozniacki in a reported 3-minute phone conversation. Wow, the couple announced their engagement on New Year's Eve and were due to be wed in November. And lastly, Malcolm Glazer, the owner of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Manchester United, has passed away at the age of 85. The family bought the Bucs in 1995 for an then NFL record $192 million and helped transform the Bucs into a model franchise. And those are your Current Sports Quick Hit headliners for this May 29th. The lines are now open, 517-355-9527. Back to you, Al.
All right. Thanks a lot, Alex. Man, a busy day. A lot happened yesterday in sports and, of course, this morning with a few interesting stories there. Rory really broke off his engagement in a 3-minute conversation. Wow. Phone conversation at that. You know, just having a 3-minute phone conversation. Hey, babe, we got to cut this off. Man, that's a bad way to break up with somebody over the phone. If you're going to break up with somebody, don't do it over the phone, folks. Oh, boy. Welcome to Current Sports, though. I am your host, Al Martin. Boy, oh, boy, I'm excited about today's show. It's a gorgeous Thursday, and I am so honored and pleased that you have allowed Current Sports to be a part of your afternoon. And like Alex said, we'll be taking your calls during our second segment on today's show. We're going to get to our interview first, and then afterwards we'll open our phone lines at 517-355-9527. Of course, you can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and also my Twitter page at Al Martin WKAR. We'll talk about anything that's on your noggin, including the Tigers, as they fell again to the Yeah, the Oakland A's. It was a tough one. You know, they had the game. The game was in the bag. Then the ninth inning comes. Brad Ausmus decides to make a change and throw in Joe Nathan. And, yeah, that's how things transpired. You saw what happened. A three-run homer. Game is over. So we'll talk about that game. And, of course, you know, we got to talk about some NBA playoff action and, of course, the NHL action as both the Blackhawks and the Pacers stayed alive. Yes, both in crucial games. If they would have lost, both of those teams would have been saying goodbye to their championship hopes and dreams. But, man, oh, man, the NBA playoffs. How about the Pacers, though? I mean, you know, getting a game over the Heat. Yeah, Paul George, unbelievable. He just went redonkulous on the basketball court, especially in that fourth quarter. Without his performance, let's be honest here, the Indiana Pacers would have lost. He had a great performance. And you know what? Paul George is such a great player. But, you know, time and time again, you know, we've seen Paul George just have off-the-court issues. And I always go back to that selfie incident where he accidentally, you know, he sent a picture with his shirt off to somebody who he thought was a girl, happened to be a guy, kind of a mini version of catfish, I guess you can say. It became kind of a mini distraction because you had the media who would attend the practices and, you know, after games would ask him about it, and it just became kind of a fiasco. And Paul George had to simply say, hey, that's done with. I'm focused on basketball right now. But I'm looking here. I was just scrolling through Facebook, you know, before the show, prepping a little bit, and now I see that Paul George has been slapped with a paternity suit by an ex-stripper. An ex-stripper, ladies and gents, I kid you not, this is not phony. I went to a few sources to make sure that it was true and not just, you know, smoke being blown. But a former stripper slapped the NBA star with a paternity petition charging that he is the father of her four-week-old daughter, Olivia. Now, her name is Daniela Regic, I believe. And she, and, you know, a Manhattan Supreme Court filing came just hours before. This happened just hours before George took the hardwood last night to take on the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. Now, he had a great game. He actually had 21 points in that fourth quarter to lead the Pacers to the win and to stave off elimination. And it's pretty crazy because Regic's lawyer, Raul Fielder, went on to say afterwards, quote, congratulations for doing a good job last night. Hopefully he steps up here as well. Referring to, of course, stepping up and becoming, you know, the man that he's supposed to be, you know, the father of her daughter. And Regic, who used to dance in a Miami strip club, she met George in the Sunshine State last summer. And the pair, they struck up a relationship. Now, the 24-year-old, she got pregnant. They broke up. And Fielder said that Regic moved to New York during the pregnancy to stay with the family. Now, Olivia was born on May 1st, and a private paternity test revealed that George was the father. Now, the paternity petition seeks a court-ordered DNA test and legal declaration that George is the dad to completely confirm it. Now, this hasn't caught George by any surprise. Fielder has said that George has already met the baby already, and George's lawyer did not immediately return a call for comment during this whole thing. And in a statement to TMZ before the baby was born, George actually said, quote, if and when there is legal confirmation that I am the father, I will fully embrace my responsibilities. There is a personal matter that is being sorted out, so I hope you can respect my privacy, end quote. Interesting stuff. I really hope as this series goes on now, it's a 3-2 series, you know, now with Miami still leading. But with the performance the Indiana Pacers had yesterday, as a Pacers fan and as a follower of the NBA that wants to see a Game 7, I really hope that this story does not become a distraction, because it can. It certainly can. But we'll talk about it. Again, our second segment of today's show, we'll have Throwback Thursday for you. We'll talk about the Tigers and their late-inning mistake last night. And from there, we'll talk some NHL playoffs, some NBA playoffs, and talk about Tiger Woods missing the U.S. Open. All of that and so much more. You want to stay tuned. But I had the pleasure of sitting down with what I would go on record as saying had to be the best interview that I've ever had with a college athlete. I kid you not. I'm not exaggerating, because as soon as I was done with the interview, I kind of had to just sit back and recall all the interviews I've done. I've been covering college sports here for Michigan State for quite some time. I've talked to many players. And I can't recall a young man who was as eloquently spoken and is as comfortable on the camera and speaking as Shalik Calhoun. Yes, Michigan State University defensive end. It was a ball. It was definitely a ball last night sitting down with Shalik as I picked his brain about so much, not even just about his stellar season that he had, yes, last year, but so much and beyond, as you'll get to hear in just a moment. And as, you know, you dedicated current sports radio fans out there, as a treat, as we love to do each and every Thursday here at 1 o'clock, is sort of give you a preview of current sports TV, which airs tonight at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV, my sit-down with Shalik Calhoun. But to reward those who tune in each and every day, I'm going to play that interview on today's show as you just get to see and dive into the mind of this young man. Again, I told him afterwards, he needs his own TV show. He's great. Here it is, Shalik Calhoun. And at first, I had to ask him because he's from Middletown, New Jersey. And I had to ask him, what was it like growing up in Middletown and to sort of paint the picture of growing up there in New Jersey?
First, I want to say thanks for having me.
You know, hey, no
it's
problem.
Always an honor being on the show with you guys. But I would say, you know, Middletown wasn't that impressive, you know. We didn't do much, you know. So when I did things, it was mostly with my friends, you know, we didn't go out much, but it's just a little rural town, man. It's a little rural town.
It's kind of got a small feel, small
yeah,
community
it,
feel.
It very,
too.
You know what? We're split up in two, because there's a Middletown North and there's a Middletown South.
Okay.
But we don't mess with the Middletown South people, you know. They're
rivals. Really?
They're the rivals. So we don't go in that part of town.
Reminds me of home, like East Side and West Side Detroit.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
But there you have that. Now, for you, Shalik, you know, growing up there, I gotta ask, because, you know, you definitely took a great liking to this sport, you know, when you were young and became pretty good at it. That's the reason why you're sitting right here, you know. For you, how did you fall in love with the game of football?
Honestly, I didn't start playing until I was a freshman in high school.
Wow. Hold on, you didn't play organized football up until that point in high school?
I actually wasn't allowed to. Let me tell you why, though. Because I actually went for, like, little league, and, you know, I've always been tall, always been one of the taller guys. So, you know, weight, I carry weight very well. And when I went to go try out, you know, the guy sat me on the scale. He was like, you know, you're overweight. And he told me, he said, lift up your shirt. He said, you got a six pack, man. If I make you lose that, you'll be anorexic. Like, you can't play. He would not let me. And I think that's what made my passion grow for the game so much, that I saw a lot of my friends playing and I was unable to play. So I'm like, man, I got to get out there. You know, I need to play.
Right.
And finally, you know, when I got into high school, I was like, you know, it's finally time. I finally get a chance. And guess what I did my freshman year?
What's that?
I quit.
You quit your freshman year?
I quit my freshman year, man. It was a cold day. I couldn't take it. I wasn't prepared for that type of terrain. And I quit. But I came back definitely the next year. I talked to the coaches, and, you know, my passion grew a lot more, you know, for that year that I took off, well, quit the team. My passion grew a lot more, and I grew a lot stronger to football, the game of football.
Wow. So the initial reason why you couldn't play was that you were too small?
I was too big.
You were too big.
Yeah.
So you get to high school, mm-hmm. and you go out for the team your freshman year. You make the squad.
Yeah.
And you quit. So how did you get reintroduced to the game? How did you get back on the squad? What year? Did you wait another year?
I think my sophomore year. The high school coach, you know, the varsity coaches came up to me and was like, hey, man, you know, you're going to play. You're playing on this team. And, you know, I got a little taste of it my freshman year, and it was just a little bad weather that threw me off, but I knew I wanted to play.
A little bad weather threw Shalik Calhoun up.
I know. Not many will believe it now, but it definitely did. It threw my game off a little bit. But I would definitely say my sophomore year, the coaches came to me and was like, you know, you're going to play this game. And I was like, I kind of thought about it, and I was like, yeah, you're right, I do want to play, you know. And I came back, you know, and it was like I never missed a beat.
Well, you made a great decision, obviously, Shalik. Now, you know, what a lot of people don't know, you know, when I was, you know, before the show, we talked about this. But you actually, your first love was not the game of football. It was basketball, the hardwood. Now, for you, I want to go back in time real quick and go to this moment. The Buck Holiday Classic. You threw up 38 points versus Freehold High School and had 17 points, I believe, in the fourth quarter. Take me back to the Buck Holiday Classic, and you must have just been in a complete zone that game, huh, Shalik?
I was definitely saying it was a good game for, you know, not just me, but the rest of my team. You know, we were out there having a lot of fun. I think that was the biggest thing. You know, we were able to have fun and, you know, play with those guys and all the smiles on our faces. And we wanted to win so bad, man. And they kept feeding me the ball, you know. And I just wanted to, you know, make them guys happy. So I kept trying to score. And it worked out well, as you see.
Definitely. And you're listed as 6'4". What position were you in high school?
I was a forward.
You were a forward?
Yeah. I was a big guy. I was the five.
Wow. Yeah. And a lot of people don't know. You actually have a tattoo. Because basketball was your first love. You have a tattoo of what is it? It's a basketball tattoo, right?
A basketball with a crown on my back. Definitely.
A basketball with a crown on your back. So you obviously love the game of basketball. Why didn't you choose the basketball route? What happened? Tell the people what happened.
I would say growing up, you know, I got a lot of, I would say when I got into about my sophomore to junior year, I got a lot of football offers. You know, a lot of people came after me for football, and it was a lot of D1 offers. And, you know, I love the game of basketball, and I went, you know, I traveled all around. You know, I played on the AAU team, and, you know, we went to Florida and stuff. But the thing was, a lot of the, you know, college basketball coaches saw that I have all these, you know, huge D1 offers. And they thought that that's what I wanted to play. You know, they were stuck on the issue that, you know, Shalik, you know, he wants to play football. He's just playing basketball for fun. And, you know, little did they know, you know, I love basketball, man. And if I would have just got, you know, maybe one good D1 offer, I probably wouldn't have been here today. You know, I probably would be somewhere else on the hardwood right now taking foul shots. But
wow.
Yeah, so.
The right school would have approached you during that time and offered you, you wouldn't be sitting here. You'd probably been playing basketball somewhere else.
I'd be a little B-ball star, man.
Man, Izzo, you hear this? Izzo, you may, hey, he might have to play both sports. Gotta love that. All
try
right.
to get him, man. He won't contact me. Yeah, I'm waiting on it.
He's a busy man.
Yeah,
Trust me. Tom Izzo's a busy man. All right, Shalik. Now, you know, you know, being a football player here at Michigan State, I mean, I just talked about, you know, the accolades that you have right now. Right now, you're going into your junior year, I believe, now. Looking at your body of work, though, especially last season, I mean, you turned a lot of heads. I mean, people had you on, you know, Big Ten, first teams and everything. I mean, people raved about you.
Yeah.
Coming in and making an impact so fast, can you talk about that a little bit? Because I've seen players, especially through the MSU football program, that don't get that shot and don't pan out to be great players and have to wait sometimes until their senior year to do so. But, you know, for you, it came so early.
I would say the biggest thing that helped me become, you know, as productive as I've been, you know, for the past year has been my teammates. You know, those guys, not only have they been pushing me, but they've been, you know, guiding me. When I first came in, I had a lot of guys, you know, definitely, you know, step up and take me under their wing, you know, and make sure that I understood, you know, what I was playing, understood what I was supposed to do, and understood the scheme that we were running. And, I mean, it was pretty impressive to, you know, be able to be Big Ten Defensive Lineman of the Year, you know, first team, you know, this and that. But I would say it's pretty amazing, man. When I sit back and think about it now, it's a pretty amazing feeling. And, you know, for me to have the opportunity is all by the grace of God, man. That's about all I can say is, you know, he's definitely blessed me, and he blessed me with the right people that I, you know, to be around me to help me succeed in life. And like I said, is the teammates, and I have a lot of coaches that put me in the right position. You know, Coach Narduzzi, one of the guys, he's a madman in the, you know, in the playbook. So he knows exactly, he knows your skill, he knows where you need to be at, and he's definitely placed me in the right position to, you know, succeed in life.
Yeah,
or succeed at this game of football.
Without a doubt. And you talk about some of those teammates. I mean, who were some of those teammates that pushed you to become the player that you are right now?
First and foremost, I would definitely say Max. You know, he was somebody that, you know, as soon as I stepped on the field, you know, knowing that he was behind you, it kind of gave you that feel like, all right, I'm untouchable. You know,
Max Buller.
He was like the big brother. You know, you go to a fight, you're like, man, I got my big brother with me. You know, so no, it was definitely nice having him, you know, behind me, and he had a lot of confidence in me, and that kind of helped me fill myself with confidence. You know, feel as if I could play in front of him, and I could, you know, play in the Big Ten. Other than him, Will Golston, Denzel Drone, Jarrell Worthy, you know, it was a lot of guys, man, that helped me over the years, you know, not even just this year, helped me since I've been a freshman, you know, guys that have been pushing me and, you know, helping me understand the craft of, you know, playing the position of defensive end.
You know, I got to ask you, you know, you bring up Max, and of course, it had to be disheartening not having him, you know, by your guys' side out there in California to compete in the Rose Bowl. I mean, what went through your head, you know? Was it kind of weird to look back and not see him there?
It was. At first, you know, when we first heard about it and heard that he wouldn't be playing, you know, it was a sad thing for, you know, for us. And not only that, it was sad for him, you know, knowing that he worked so hard during the year to get us to this position. You know, he was a key role in us, you know, succeeding this year. But that being said, you know, we just looked at it as, you know, it's another obstacle. And we're always going to be faced with obstacles no matter what in life. You know, you're always going to have to overcome some obstacle. And that was just one of them. But, you know, a couple times I did look back to see if he was there. And, you know, I was looking like, oh, no. You know,
it's kind of weird, right?
Yeah, you know, I didn't see number 40. And I was, you know, but I had a lot of confidence in, you know, the other guys that backed him up, like Darian Harris and Kyle Ellsworth, you know, because I've seen those guys play in practice. And I know what they can do. So, you know, we didn't have a need for him at the moment at middle linebacker. But I knew when, you know, their opportunity came, they would definitely, you know, show up. And
They saw what happened.
They did.
You did. You know, and Shalik, you know, looking at how, you know, guys like Max and Benny Fowler and, you know, Mekhijah Reynolds, as we talked about in the opening monologue, how those guys are now making their NFL dreams come true and now in the NFL. What's that like to see them? And, you know, Kaiser is actually your college roommate, right?
Yes, yes.
How cool was that to see him ink a deal with the Miami Dolphins?
It was nice to see the progress, man. You know, to see, you know, basically deals being made. And, you know, even when he got cut from the Saints, he still, you know, kept his head up high and he made another play for another team. And, you know, fortunately, he was able to be picked up by the Miami Dolphins. So it just shows, man, that hard work pays off. And, you know, it shows that, you know, if I keep doing what I need to do and, you know, keep making progress, you know, the sky's the limit. So I can definitely say that, you know, I've been around Benny Fowler for a long time. He's, like I say, he's one of those guys who didn't play the same position, but he definitely took me under his wing. And, you know, just to see him, you know, make a team and not, you know, be injured and come back and play so well, it just shows that, you know, man, that hard work really pays off. And, you know, I'm happy and, you know, proud of those guys and can't wait to see what they do in the NFL.
Was Mekhijah in touch with you at all throughout that entire process of you know, the NFL and trying to make a team? And what did he say? What did he tell you?
We actually, when he went to the Saints, he told me that he got picked up by the Saints. And the day he got cut, he came back, I believe the next day, and I saw him. I was like, you know, Mekhijah, what are you doing here? He said, man, I got cut. He said, but don't worry about it. I got two more teams lined up. I got the Falcons or the Dolphins. And, you know, it just shows, man, he has a lot of connections, a lot of passion for the game, for him just not to give up after, you know, one trial run. You know, he's always trying to, you know, improve and getting bigger and better, and he's moving on to bigger and better things.
Without a doubt. Now, I got to ask you this. Coming off a Rose Bowl championship season, are you guys feeling any pressure to try and duplicate or live up to the hype that is now on you guys?
I feel like a lot of people put pressure on this season because of how, you know, well we played last season, but we don't feel the pressure, you know. It's one of those things. We know we have the pieces. We know we have the coaching. The biggest thing is just to put it together now, you know. If we understand the coaching and we listen to the coaches and we do what they tell us to do, you know, we'll be successful. And it shows because, you know, like I said, our defensive coordinator, you know, was trying to get hired as a lot of people were trying to hire him as a head coach, but he came back another year to stay with us. So, you know, we have the pieces to the puzzle. Now it's just to put them together, and I'm pretty sure we can do that because we have a lot of talent, a lot of ambition, and, you know, a lot of heart on our team. So,
what's it like playing for Pat Narduzzi? Because he is such a fiery guy. I love interviewing him too, because, I mean, you never know what's going to pop out his mouth. And he just is he's so charismatic, and he handles himself like a head coach, you know?
Yeah.
What's it like playing for him out in the field?
It's hectic, man. It's hectic. It's like being in the middle of traffic, man. You know, you on the freeway and you're trying to dance through traffic. You don't know what to do, which way to go. You're just trying to make your way through. And I feel like that's what it is with him, man. He is like, those words are flying at you like cars, you know, going 90 miles per hour. But it is a blessing to play for him, man. He knows the game of football. He understands offense. He understands defense. He understands special team. He understands head coaches. Like, he knows the game of football inside and out. So, you know, to see him work and then to see him, you know, actually come to us and like, hey, I got something new. I got something new for you guys. You know, we kind of get amped up. Like, all right, you can see like the passion in his eyes when he talk about the game of football. It's kind of like having a newborn child with him. You know, he's just so eager. He just wants to hold it. You know, he doesn't know what to do. And, you know, to be out there and play for him, man, it's a wonderful thing. But it does have its scary moments, you know.
I can only imagine. I get scared interviewing sometimes. Yeah. You never know what's going to happen, man. But that's great stuff. All right, Shalik, really quickly, before I let the 12 minute at you, you know, we talked and we love to cover things here on the show with our guest that has to do with what's happening right now in the sports world. And we love to pose different debate questions like we do on the radio show Monday through Friday from 1 to 2 o'clock on WKRAM 870. Now, you know about the whole Northwestern unionization deal right now, as the football players there are trying to unionize and possibly be looked at as employees of the university, which could open up a whole can of worms. For you, when you heard this story, What went through your head about what this could possibly mean for the MSU football program and athletics, college athletics beyond?
Like I said, the first thing that came to my mind was, you know, we'll finally be making some money, man. We're getting paid.
You guys thought you're going to be paid,
we're
right?
We're going to get paid. We're going to get paid. You know, we'll be making a lot of money. But second thing, after I sat down and thought about it was, you know, a lot of things go along with being paid, you know. So maybe they'll extend, you know, a year onto how long we have to be here as, you know, football players and, you know, as student athletes. You know, how long extra do we have to be here? So not only 3, but maybe 4 years as a football player. And, you know, When I thought about it, I was like, you know what, I kind of like the rules as they are. You know, we have enough money to, you know, to eat and for housing and in our scholarship that we'll be all right. So I didn't mind it, and I'm okay with how things are set right now, and I'm feeling like we should stick with that way.
Yeah, and now even though this whole thing is going to the board and still has to be voted upon, there's still a lot of steps to be made here. Yeah. Even if it passes, there's no guarantee that college athletes will get paid or that team will get paid. But for you, and you just said it just now, I mean, you feel as though right now with your lifestyle and with the scholarship that you guys now have on this football team and have had for years, you don't need to be paid.
Don't need to pay. I wouldn't say I don't need to be paid. But
see how you word it.
I gotta word it the right way. No, I would say that, you know, you're right. We don't need to be paid right now, and I feel like, you know, the rules the way they are fine by me.
You heard it right here from a football player himself at Michigan State University. You don't believe that college athletes should be paid. There you have that.
All right,
Shalik. I know. We can go on and on about this debate. Well, Shalik, you got 5 more minutes, man.
I got 5 more minutes.
Stick around because the 12th man starts right now. Here we are. It is time for the 12th man with MSU defensive end Shalik Calhoun. You ready?
I'm ready.
Random questions here, okay? You ready? All right.
Let's start it off.
Lance from Cincinnati wants to know, what was your biggest motivation to return to Michigan State for your junior season?
I would have to say my degree, you know, obtaining my degree. No one in my immediate family has their degree, you know, especially from a university. So, you know, I feel like that's something big for my family. You know, I want to be the first one in my family to have my degree and, you know, something I could pass on to my children. Like, you know, I made it, you can do it, you know, and it's kind of motivation for those guys.
What if you do have just an amazing season, your junior season, and, you know, you're a pretty highly touted draft pick? I mean, would you consider making that move?
I don't know right now. You know, it hasn't crossed my mind. The biggest focus I've had is, you know, this year, playing this year in school. You know, I haven't looked, you know, too far beyond that.
Gotcha. Good answer. Lance, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. All right, Rory from New York wants to know, do you have a specific artist you listen to on game day? And if so, who is it?
Shout out to New York, man. I just want to give my shout out to New York East Coast.
Definitely.
But I would say probably Ace Hood. You know, he has a lot of music that I listen to that gets me fired up. Just basically because he has a lot of passion when he speaks too, and his, you know, his music. But I mean, it's a lot of different genres I listen to.
You got a favorite artist right now, other than Ace Hood?
Not right now. I couldn't tell you my artist, man. I couldn't tell you. You might laugh at me. I can't tell you who my artist
really?
Is.
Really? Yeah. We'll talk off camera. Yeah. Okay. Rory, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. All right, George from the D-Town, Detroit. Which NFL quarterback would you most like to sack, and why?
I would say Johnny Manziel.
Really?
Because I didn't get a chance at him in college, man. He was going too fast. Now he's in the NFL. So I just want my shot, man. He's a very shifty guy. So, you know, I just want an opportunity to see, you know, how shifty he is and if he'll be elusive enough to get away from me.
That's a good answer. So you wanted your shot at him when he was in college.
Exactly. Didn't get it. So now I get my chance. Hopefully I get my chance, you know, moving on to the pros.
If you do, we're going to play this back. Hey. I'm going to play this back. When you get to the league and play this back, if you ever get your hands on Johnny Football, I love that. All right, thanks a lot, Jordan. That's a great question. David from Saginaw wants to know, where do you think people will see the biggest improvement in your game between last season and this upcoming one?
I would definitely say in stopping the run, you know, and not only that, you know, making plays. Last season I had a lot of plays made, but I feel like I can do better at my position, you know, if I just understand the defense more. And that's what I've been working on, just understanding, you know, offensive schemes and understanding what I can do to better myself, you know, playing against these offenses.
I love that. All right. Thanks a lot, David. Appreciate it. Paul from East Lansing. After the spring game, a lot of people compared Demetrius Cooper's style of play with yours. In what ways are you similar and in what ways are you different?
He's a young guy with a lot of talent, man. And I would say we're definitely similar in, you know, the way that we pass rush. I would say that he comes in with a lot more talent than I did. You know, he knows how to stop the run. He's very good at using his hands, and it's something that comes to him naturally. So, right. You know, when I came here, it was something that I had to learn. So, you know, just seeing his ability, you're gonna see a great player out of him. And, you know, when he has his opportunity to step up and play, you won't notice that I'm out of the game.
That's amazing. That's good stuff. And really quickly, how'd you get the nickname Bane? I love that nickname, Shalik. How'd you get that nickname?
With my face mask, one of the GAs, you know, I was out of practice, and he noticed. He was like, man, you know, you look like Bane. And I just, you know, I took it over, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to run with it. So, you know, a lot of people, you know, ran with it, and I thank those for, you know, calling me in, and I'm going to keep it going.
Bane, that's the coolest nickname to me. I'm a huge Batman fan. Bane from Batman, one of my favorite villains of all time. But thanks a lot. That was Shalik Calhoun, Michigan State defensive end. It was a great time sitting down with him. Again, I think it was the best time I've ever had sitting down with an MSU college athlete or just college athlete in general. It was great. You can catch that episode tonight at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. Tune in. Current sports. We have highlights from the Diamond Classic. We'll talk about Keith Appling as he auditions his talents for four NBA teams. Mekhijah Reynolds. I mean, we talk about so much on tonight's show. You do not want to miss it. Again, 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. It'll be a great time. Okay, well, let's hit the break. When we come back, Throwback Thursday is coming right at you, and we'll talk a little Tigers as they fall to the Oakland A's last night. Don't go anywhere. Current sports returns in just a sec. Welcome to Current Sports, ladies and gents. I am your host, Al Martin. Our phone lines are now open. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Anybody who wants to call in, we'll talk about anything that's on your noggin. And while you guys are blowing up our phone lines, Matt Lucky is here to give you Throwback Thursday. What happened on this day in sports history? How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing well, Al. And this is a busy day, May 29th, going back through the annals of sports history. We'll start in 1911. The first running of the Indy 500 took place. Ray Heron ended up winning. So I'm guessing he was the first one to take that giant gulp of milk in victory lane here. 1922.
It's gotta taste so good. I wonder if it's hot, though.
No.
It's probably fresh and cold.
There's absolutely no way they're going to serve you warm milk after winning the Indy 500.
Okay, you're right.
Demand a cold glass. All right, next up, 1922. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled that organized baseball was a sport and not subject to antitrust laws. Interesting side on the business side of sports here. 1962, Buck O'Neill became the first black coach in Major League Baseball when he accepted the job with the Chicago Cubs.
Okay.
Also in 1962, a really good day for teammates Bob Allison and Harmon Killebrew because they both hit first inning grand slams, helping the Minnesota Twins rout the Indians 14-3.
They both hit. That's unbelievable.
Both hit grand slams. Wow. I'm guessing the opposing pitcher did not make it out of the first inning.
No, not at all.
Hoping so for his sake. 1977, A.J. Foyt won the Indy 500 for the fourth time. Wow.
That's pretty good. That's impressive. So
that's a lot of milk.
That is.
Hopefully he's not lactose intolerant.
Right.
1977, again, Sue Press became the first woman golfer to hit consecutive holes in one.
Whoa, she did not.
Consecutive holes in one.
Are you kidding me? When was this? What year was this again?
1977.
Back-to-back holes.
Back-to-back.
That's unbelievable.
She has copies of that scorecard in every room of her house, I'm guessing.
Oh,
1980, Boston's Larry Bird, perhaps you've heard of him. Mm-hmm. He was named the NBA's Rookie of the Year over the one and only Magic Johnson, probably the most heated Rookie of the Year race maybe ever.
Probably.
Magic versus Bird.
You could have went either way with those two.
Really, it's a no-lose situation.
Right, either one of those two guys. Oh, man, that's great.
Both worthy of it. 1984, the Boston Red Sox retire number 9. Of course, that's Ted Williams. And number 4 for Joe Cronin. In 1987, Robin Ventura set a college baseball record with a hit in his 57th straight game.
Wow. Wow, that's pretty impressive.
57th straight game. If he does that in the pros, he is... a surefire Hall of Famer.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, that's things you dream about.
He does it in college, and he is a footnote on baseball trivia.
Yeah, it just shows you the level of competition.
Just timing.
Right,
timing.
Right.
All right, 1990. Ricky Henderson stole his 893rd base, breaking Ty Cobb's record.
Okay, that's pretty
historic. Go on to steal over 1,000. 1992, Tim Raines of the Chicago White Sox stole his 700th career base. Not quite as impressive in light of the Ricky Henderson accomplishment, but still,
right, right.
700 career bases.
Still, that's a lot.
That's quite a bit. Let's see. 2002, Yankees pitcher Roger Clemens became the third major leaguer to strike out 10 or more batters in at least 100 starts. He might have been the first to do it with the aid of performance-enhancing drugs.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. It's an asterisk, big, huge asterisk next to that. But still, hey, it's impressive.
Even, you know, it's not like he was the only guy who was juicing, and I don't see many other guys striking out 10 more batters in 100 starts.
Right, exactly. I mean, come on,
So it's still an accomplishment, even if it's muddied.
You know how my stance is on that. I just legalized steroids.
Yeah,
hey,
well, yeah. I'm sure that's his stance, too. 2005 and 2011, this is a great day for Dan Weldon, because in both 2005 and 2011, he won the Indy 500.
Wow.
Twice on the same day.
That's a knock on wood
so
right
just
there,
hoping
man.
The next time it comes around to May 29th, I'm going to put my money on Dan Weldon.
Yeah.
I think everybody should.
It's
all right,
eerie.
And then 2010, Roy Halladay added another milestone to his stellar career, tossing a second perfect game. He has tossed two perfect games. This one happened May 29th, 2010. A 1-0 victory over the Florida Marlins.
It's impressive stuff.
And that's all I got.
Hey, thanks a lot, man. There's Throwback Thursday, where we take a look at what happened on this Thursday in sports history. Oh, that's a busy, busy list right there. A lot happened on this day in sports, folks. Alex, how you doing, man? Welcome to the show. How you doing, brother?
Doing pretty well, Al, and I can't wait to get into Tigers since I got to call you out again on a couple things.
I was right about this one, might I add. Let's dive right into it. All right, Tigers. Detroit Tigers, they fall to the Oakland A's. And a game where they shouldn't have lost this. They shouldn't have lost this at all. Detroit Tigers manager Brad Ausmus pulled Anibal Sanchez last night in the ninth inning to bring in closer Joe Nathan to try and put the finishing touches on a 1-0 lead over the A's. Now, the inning result was not good as Nathan gave up a 3-run walk-off homer, and the A's went on to beat the Tigers 3-1. Now, the A's and Tigers, they play the final game of that four-game series today, actually, at 3:35, an afternoon game. Now, you know, Alex, looking at this game, though, this is the typical Tigers lose story here. Starting pitching comes in and has a great outing. Anibal Sanchez was great. Yeah, I mean, he was in command all night. I mean, he was in a zone. Then the closer walks in and completely throws away a gem. That's exactly what Joe Nathan did. And I don't know how many times when we talk about the Tigers here on the show, how we talk about how great the starting pitching is, but how the bullpen needs help. I mean, I'm tired. It's like sound like a broken record now. And that's exactly what happened last night. I mean, Sanchez in command again all night, allowing only two hits, took a shutout bid into the ninth inning. And now, granted, you know, Scott Kazmir was great yesterday. I thought he had a great game. I'll tell you, my team almost blew up last night, Matt, because I was flipping between Tigers to the NHL playoffs to the NBA playoffs. I mean, trying to keep up with everything. And, you know, from what I saw, I thought Scott Kazmir played great. I mean, he had a great outing for the A's last night. Actually, his first complete game, and get this, actually nearly 8 years. That's a long time. Now, you know, Nathan is really having an odd year thus far for me. Because if you look at his performances so far this season has been somewhat uneven. I mean, at least measured against his own stellar standards of the past, if you will. Last year, he blew 3 saves. He converted 43 of 46 chances. This year, get this, he's already blown 4. Already blown 4. That's more than last year combined. That's unbelievable to me. And you know, last year, he gave up 2 home runs. This season, he's already given up 4. So, really an odd year for Joe Nathan. Was not expecting him to come out. And I thought the game was over. I thought, hey, you got a man on second. You got one out. Hey, that should be an easy closeout game right there. And then everything just hit the fan and boom, shakalaka. It was disappointing for me, Matt.
It's the same old story over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And with Joe Nathan, maybe you would say, you know, he's just getting old, but like you said, just last year he was 43 of 46. And I know, you know, closers in general, it's an inexact science and things happen and stuff goes wrong, but it just seems like there is something cursed about being the closer for the Detroit Tigers.
I know, right? That's eerie. Yeah.
It's eerie. And on the other side of it, how many times is Coco Crisp going to kill the Tigers?
I'm telling you, man. Coco just goes Coco Crisp the time.
He is a thorn in the paw of the Tiger organization. It is ridiculous how many timely big hits he gets against, you know, any of Detroit's pitchers starting or in the bullpen. He ends Sanchez's night with that double. He's the winning run, or the tying run on second, and then, you know, the whole thing falls apart for Nathan. But it doesn't happen unless Coco Crisp kind of starts that rally. It seems like any time it is a big moment against the A's, and we've had enough of them over the last few years, he always comes through and gives the A's a big leg up. So, you know, you love to hate him. Actually, really, I'm sure Tigers fans just hate him because he has really tortured us over the years. But you have to respect a guy who makes big plays like that and kind of gets his team going, even when it looks like the game's over.
Right.
And Coco Crisp is that guy. It just,
It's a tough series. I mean, and the Tigers just haven't just gotten hot, really, throughout this entire series, even going back to the previous series and going back to Cleveland. I mean, the Tigers just are really struggling right now just to get hits, to produce runs here. And, I mean, shout out to Torii Hunter because he was the only lone Tiger to actually get on the scoreboard there. I mean, he had a homer. But other than that, I mean, it was really a struggle. We have a caller right now, Mike from Saginaw. How you doing, Mike? Welcome to the show.
How you doing there? I would like to comment on the Tigers. Since Prince Fielder has left and they put Roger Davis in there, I think the team is much more well-rounded. And since Jim Leland retired, it seems like Brad Osmus, it's like the Tigers, they're going to a mini slump right now, but I think that the team is going to be just fine. You know, they playing Oakland A's. You got to realize that they have one of the best records in the American League right at this time. So they playing a competitive, real competitive team. And it's early in the year, of course, we know that. But it's like the Oakland A's, they're probably a little better team right now. And as time will go on, they'll be able to catch up with them. What you think?
Yeah, hey, thanks a lot, Mike, for the call. I think you make a great point because right now, I mean, it's by no means, I don't think we should hit the panic button. I've always said, I mean, a baseball season is a marathon. It's not a sprint. I mean, there's still a ton of games left in this season. I think it's more amplified, though, looking at, even before this series, the slump that the Tigers are in. We're just waiting for the Tigers to rattle off consecutive wins here. You thought they had a chance last night to do it, you know, coming off a win and coming into the third game of this series with some momentum. And then you feel as though they're finally going to get consecutive wins. And the way it's blown, and that's why it's so amplified now. And the reason why we're kind of talking about this is because the Tigers are just, it seems like they're right there to getting out of this slump. And then something like this happens where your closer comes in and can't close out the game. It's just kind of disheartening to a degree. I think Brad Ausmus is a great manager. I really like the cool, calm demeanor he's brought to this ball squad. And the Tigers will be fine. We still have a long way to go. The Tigers will be fine. But, you know, looking at how they lost last night's game, it's got to be a little bit disheartening for a lot of Tigers fans out there. Alex?
Yeah, the other thing to note about this is you did beat Sonny Gray the night before. Sonny Gray is a phenomenal pitcher. So as much as, yeah, it was a bad loss and Joe Nathan blew his save, Michael's right. It is the Oakland A's. I mean, Sonny Gray is a great pitcher. Donaldson is a heck of a hitter, too. So it's not like you're giving up a home run against the 8 or 7 hitter of the Cleveland Indians. You're playing a first-place caliber team in the Oakland A's.
Yeah, you are. So bottom line, don't hit the panic button. But the Tigers got to start winning. It's got to happen soon, I think.
Well, and the other thing is it came after they were the hottest team in baseball.
Right.
You know, they go from being absolutely on fire to 2-8 in their last 10.
Right.
I mean, it's that kind of drastic switch that makes people kind of go, uh-oh, things might be, you know, rocking the boat here. But at the same time, it's just the ebb and flow of the baseball season. They'll bounce back. It'll be fine. I do think they need to sort out the bullpen before it's too late. Because it's just kind of...
As it's easier said than done. Yeah.
And we've been saying that for 3 years. Got to sort out the bullpen.
Right.
I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't know if they're going to make a move or something.
Right. They already did the Hanrahan move, and I don't know about that. I don't know how that's going. So
doesn't seem like it's going very well.
No.
I'm saying they might need to make a big move and actually do something to address that problem because it's going to get worse before it gets better. And how many times do they have to get, you know, this close to winning a World Series? Well, and having that bite him in the butt.
Oh, this is World Series or bust. We've gone on record to say that. I mean,
exactly.
If you don't win a World Series this year, there will be some big moves made, Matt, without a doubt. So,
yeah. Well, last question I have for you two. Do you blame Joe Nathan in this loss, or is it more Tigers hitting, not putting enough on the board to help him
out? I think both. I don't think you can pin that on one particular aspect. I think the Tigers have to hit better. You know, I said that on Monday. Yeah, the Tigers have to hit better. Guys got to start producing and getting the ball on the bat way more than what they're doing right now. And Joe Nathan, it's like I said, it's an odd performance for him. It's an odd year for him because we've seen him play so well. And you think, I mean, yeah, watching that game last night, you got a man on second, one out. An average closer is supposed to close out that game in that moment. Now, Joe Nathan has been so good in the past, it kind of, you know, reveals to me that, you know, he has this in him. He can close out a game. I just don't know what's going on this season. So you can't blame one particular aspect of this because there's others that say, hey, well, Brad, you should have left Sanchez in to finish the game. Well, I've seen that argument left and right.
Well, the good thing is, no matter what he's doing now, regardless of if he's blown too many saves already or an average closer could close out that game, when it comes to playoff time, where the Tigers usually struggle with the closer, you know Joe Nathan, with his experience in the postseason, you don't have to worry about him performing in the playoffs. I believe.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Like I said, I'm not confident right now, I guess you should say.
I mean, you believe that, but you'd also believe that he wouldn't blow four saves in 16 tries to start the year.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, those are two things.
You can believe a lot, but what happens is going to happen regardless.
Right.
To me, as far as do I blame Nathan or the Tigers' bats, like you said, Al, it's a bit of both. Because, you know, obviously they didn't get enough run support, but at the end of the day, a closer's job is to shut the door and win the game.
Right.
And he's not doing it right now.
Exactly. And to go on that argument about Brad Ausmus leaving Anibal Sanchez in, he very well could have done that. I mean, Sanchez went on the record to say, hey, I felt pretty good. But, hey, think that Joe Nathan is going to close
out
that game.
Exactly. And Sanchez had already thrown 111
right.
pitches.
His pitch count was through the roof. Yeah, right. Exactly. So, all right, guys, let's hit the break. When we come back, we'll talk about the NHL playoffs as the Blackhawks stayed alive, Chicago. And also the Indiana Pacers came up with a clutch win. Don't go anywhere. We return in just a sec.
When Lance Stevenson came and blew in your ear?
I'm just here to play basketball, man. All the extracurricular activities, I don't really get into. I mean, I'm just trying to win. We need one more game to get to the finals. That's my only concern. You know, we put ourselves in a position to win tonight, you know, and as competitors, as professionals, you know, that's what we are. You know, at the end of the day, you know, we put ourselves in a position to win. All the extra, whatever Lance wants to do with, I don't really care about that.
Besides the goofiness with Lance, it looked like in the second half you were a little concerned that he was sticking his leg underneath you when you were trying to land there. Did you feel there was a dirty element to some of the stuff that was going on out there?
No. I mean, we don't get involved in things we can't control. It's not how we play ball. Only thing we can't control is how we approach the game in game six. You know, Lance is Lance. He's going to do what he needs to do to help his team win. And as two of the leaders of our team, we're going to do what it takes to help our team win. So, you know, the game is reffed by the refs. They ref it how they see it. We play it, and you live with the results.
Dwayne, have either one of you ever thought about blowing in someone's ear as a defensive tactic?
Pardon my wife. Blew my wife's ear before. That was definitely a defensive tactic.
Yeah. That's the second time that's happened.
That's the second time it's happened.
Yeah, the second time it's happened. Yeah. See you guys.
Oh boy, how funny is that? That's Dwayne Wade, LeBron James of the Miami Heat addressing last night's game between the Indiana Pacers, in which they lost. The series is now 3-2. And Lance Stephen had some interesting tactics to try to annoy LeBron James, if you will. And that included blowing in his ear. It included, you know, grabbing him by the waist. I mean, it was some crazy antics that he tried. It obviously worked, though. I mean, it was a pretty entertaining, to say the least. But, you know, for me, guys, looking at that game, I mean, the Pacers, what a game for them. I mean, I tweeted this before the game. The three keys to me, and Alex, you know this, You got to live in the paint if you want to beat the Heat. You got to live in the paint. You got to get Paul George involved early, and he has to be a superstar. And you got to turn the ball over less than the Miami Heat. That's exactly what the Pacers did last night. I mean, they attacked the paint. I mean, if you look at it, it was a 22-point differential. I mean, that's double than what the Miami Heat had down low. The free throw disparity shows a much more aggressive Indiana Pacers team when it comes to going to the hole. They shot 22 free throws compared to Miami's 8, and Paul George was just redonkulous. I mean, he just turned it up in the fourth quarter to another level, and he was the Paul George that I saw at the beginning of this season, and shades of it last year too, where, you know, I talked here on Monday, Matt, on whether or not we dubbed the superstar tag too early on Paul George. And it kind of made you wonder, because looking at how he's been throughout these playoffs, I mean, he's been so inconsistent. He's had games where he's just been completely ghost. But then he has a performance like this, and it completely changes your mind that, yeah, this kid has the ability to be a superstar in this league. And I think right now he is. It just all depends on how engaged he is throughout an entire 48-minute basketball game. And he was engaged from the get-go in this one. He was very impressive.
He was impressive, and to me, I look at this game, and almost more than anything, it kind of illustrates to me why I do not think Indiana will win the series.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there will never be another playoff game in which LeBron James plays 24 minutes
right.
and scores 7 points. That will never happen again.
Right, you're right.
It will never happen again. And some of those fouls were questionable at best.
Mm-hmm.
The charge he picked up on Paul George, where George basically lunged 5 feet to his right and somehow got the call. I have no idea how he got that call.
Then the second one was a fast break move. I think it was by George Hill.
Yeah, and he barely touched him, if that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just seems like the Pacers got all the bounces last night. And they won the game by 3 points on their home floor.
Right, right.
I just don't see him winning the series. And the other thing to me is that there has never been a player who is more of an heir apparent to Dennis Rodman than Lance Stephenson.
Oh, I was just about to say that. Lance Stephenson reminded me so. I mean, because those are tattoos that Dennis Rodman used to do all the time.
I'm half expecting him to come out in game 6 and have
his hair dyed
in like a rainbow or something. Like, it just, nothing would surprise me at this point about Lance Stephenson. And the other thing you forget is that he's a pretty good player. The attention today is on, you know, blowing in his ear,
mm-hmm.
you know, all the little ticky-tack stuff he does between the whistles.
I loved it, honestly.
But he's a solid player, and he's a very important player for Indiana. It's just, it's crazy how his on-court, like, actual basketball contribution gets minimized because he's such a larger-than-life character.
He's a character, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, and you know what, to me personally, I loved Lance Stephenson's annoyance. I mean, I was brought up in the era where, you know, my dad always taught me, hey, you got to do what it takes to win. And if that means, I guess, blowing in LeBron's ear, then hey, so be it. If that means tugging on his jersey a little bit, you know, past screen. I mean, Michael Jordan used to do that all the time, to be honest with you. I mean, I remember Michael Jordan did a piece with, I forget the journalist, but after he was done, he revealed a few secrets that he used to use on the basketball court. That included sometimes on a crossover, pulling a guy's arm to get by him, tugging on a jersey, talking trash to him in his ear just to try to get into his head. I mean, that's what Lance Stephenson did last night, and it obviously worked to some degree. Now, granted, I mean, LeBron he sat on the bench most of the game, but, you know, it just took LeBron out of his game, I thought. Even going back to that three-pointer, I don't know if you remember, where Lance kind of tugged on his jersey, then LeBron gets the ball. LeBron knows he wants to take the shot or try to draw a foul, and he goes straight up, and Lance stays completely on the ground and just kind of lets LeBron goes up because LeBron is expecting the contact and throws up an air ball. I thought Lance Stephenson did get to him, and I loved it. I mean, you got to do what it takes to win, and Lance definitely did that. Defensively, I thought the Pacers were also impressive. But again, you go back to it, it's like, can the Pacers, you know, this goes now to Miami now. Can the Pacers now win on the road? Can Paul George come close to duplicating his performance last night? And again, LeBron is rarely in foul trouble. You know, you pretty much can go to Vegas right now and put money down to say that LeBron is not going to be in foul trouble in game 6. And you're pretty much, that's a safe bet, you know. And there's a lot of factors that play into here. Miami, I thought, was able to stay in the game, Matt, for me, due to that 3-point line. I mean, Rashard Lewis, I mean, coming out of nowhere and hitting like 6 threes, he was great. And yeah, hit timely shots down the stretch. It's going to be a tall order But the Pacers have to stick to that game plan, I think, of attacking the paint. Because, I mean, once that happened, you saw those moments where, you know, players like LeBron and other players here and there were picked up quick fouls, and the Pacers were able to go to the line and hit some free throws.
Yeah, it's amazing that, you know, teams don't do it more effectively or just, you know, only have that be the only part of the game is attacking Miami.
Right.
Because, you know, they don't have a lot of rim protection. I mean, Chris
not at all.
Chris Bosh is, I mean, he's a fine player, but he's not the center, you know, the 7-footer in the middle who's going to block every shot. He's right. not that guy. He's not Roy Hibbert, you know, to go to the Indiana side. So I feel like if Indiana does, like you say, just continue to relentlessly attack the paint, mm-hmm. they can wear Miami out. I'm curious to see what happens in this LeBron-Lance battle in Game 6. Because, I mean, you saw in, Game 4, I mean, Lance was already talking trash trying to get in LeBron's head, and LeBron dropped 32.
Yeah.
And Lance had 9. I mean, this game was obviously, you know, the tables turned. I'm almost willing to guarantee LeBron will have a huge game in Game 6.
Yeah, I think so,
like
too.
Like 30-plus points. Just dominant effort.
I can definitely see that. Alex?
I totally agree what Matt's saying. Not only did LeBron sit on the bench for 24 minutes, but the Indiana Pacers won by 3 points, and LeBron only scored 7 points. More importantly for me, on 2 of 10 shooting. So as much as they attacked the paint, Hibbert put up 10 and 13. George was 37 and a superstar. No matter what you do in that game from a Pacers standpoint, you're going to have to hope that LeBron scores under 10 points, sits on the bench for 20 minutes, and somehow the Heat don't score as much or don't have any role with LeBron James that game.
Well, you know, for me, I think, you know, because even before that game started, because you remember, LeBron got his first 2 points off of alley-oop to start the game immediately. And I'm like, okay, here he goes. You know, I said before this, I mean, LeBron is going to get his. LeBron is going to get his in Game 6. But you got to limit what happens other than him. You got to make other people beat you. You know, you got to try to contain Wade. You got to try to, you know, contain Bosh. It's easier said than done. But those are the guys you have to really keen in and make sure they don't have big games. Because we all know that when, you know, LeBron may throw up 30 and whatnot, 40 points here and there. But it's what the other guys do to really aid and solidify a win. In Game 1, Miami was able to do that. The Pacers were able to do that. LeBron went nuts, but the Pacers were able to a degree, limit everybody else's productivity. Period.
I hear what you're saying, but by limiting everybody else, you can't just go one-on-one with LeBron. You got to throw someone at him
saying.
In the paint.
Right, right.
But when it comes to limiting everybody else, you can't stop Rashard Lewis's 6 threes because it's from LeBron driving, Wade driving, and dishing him out for an open
that
shot.
That came from heaven above last night. With Rashard Lewis, Rashard has not really had made a stamp on this series throughout this entire, really the playoffs, the entire
regardless
playoffs.
Regardless of Rashard, any three-pointer that's an open three, that's because you collapse the paint. You can't have Wade and LeBron drive the lane. It's very simple.
It's hard to do, but you can do it. Like I said, I always go back to that game one because I said it after that game. That was the perfect blueprint, if there is any, to beat Miami. You let LeBron get his, and you force other people to beat you. And that's exactly what happened. And, hey, that's kind of what happened at the end of that game. LeBron drove. He should have took the shot, if you ask me. Then he kicks it out to somebody, to Chris Bosh, I think it was. He misses the three. That's what you got to do.
That's what you got to do, for sure. But at the same time, and I know Bosh missed the shot, but he's still playing so much better than he did early in the series. Like, you talked about the contributions they need to get from other people. It, you know, Bosh is really the key, because you know LeBron's going to give you something. Obviously, last night was an aberration. He gave you 7 points. That's not going to happen again. He's going to still be LeBron. Dwayne Wade is going to give you 20 points.
Right.
Bosh is the key. Last two games, 25 and 20. He's the key going forward in Game 6. If he has a big night, the Heat will win.
We'll see. Well, definitely, it's going to be interesting. They got a tall order in Miami, I tell you. Thanks so much to all of you for tuning in today. It's Current Sports. You catch Current Sports TV tonight at 10 p.m. as I sit down with MSU defensive end Shalique Calhoun. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKR East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic day and be easy, people.